Final hour, Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5, 106.3, The Game. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Nick Keyser here with you on this Tuesday morning. And we go to our 102.5 The Game phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. And welcome in our friend Wes Rucker from GoVols 24/7. Wes, good morning. How are you?
Morning, guys. How y'all doing? Doing all right over here.
Awesome, man. Good. Appreciate you taking time to be with us. Wes, it was a busy day for you Saturday, going to the orange and white game, then heading over to the baseball park, watching Tennessee play some baseball. Just I know it's a spring football glorified scrimmage, but what stood out to you in the orange and white game in terms of the way, particularly the offense played?
Yeah, you know, it's interesting because they only allowed about 10,000 people in there because of the construction going on, and also the press box was closed. So we were down there sort of near the field, which is kind of neat in one way, but in the other way it's not, because you kind of miss the all-22, if you know what I mean. Like,
yep.
it can be difficult sometimes to know what you're looking at and exactly what's been going on during a play. But I thought, you know, my joke was that after the first quarter, Heupel, the man who loves offense, went in there and kind of adjusted the sliders like on a video game and was like, hey, let's turn the defense down a little bit. Let's turn the offense up a little bit. Let's get some points out here for the peoples, you know. But I think they just connected a little bit better. I think the offensive line is going to be fine. I just think there was only one starter for the O-line out there. So not only does that make the first team not as good offensively, it makes the second team not as good offensively, because you've got third teamers playing with the twos and, you know, twos playing with the ones. And so when you've got a defensive line as good as Tennessee's is, and I think it is that good this season, I really think it looks pretty good, you're going to struggle a little bit to kind of block those guys. And I think you saw that, right? I mean, Dylan Sampson did not play. Hilariously, he caught the opening kickoff and didn't move, and then didn't touch the ball the rest of the day. Thought that was a nice troll by Heupel, you know, for everybody. But no, I think they got going as the day got a little bit older. You know, they got the rhythm in the passing game, and I think you saw why they're gonna be better in the pass game this season. It's the spring game. I make really nothing of it, but I think they showed, you know, the ability for those guys to get open. They showed the ability for the quarterbacks to put the ball on time, you know, in rhythm where it needs to go accurately. And so I think they started putting that together a little bit, and I think they showed you why I don't think they're going to be quite as ineffective or, you know, inconsistent as they were last season through the air.
What's your surprise level on Elijah Herring, Wes, getting into the transfer portal?
I would say what's weird is it was one of those things that was more shocking than surprising, I think, you know, because his brother is there right now, and his brother's very happy at Tennessee, and his brother's going to stay at Tennessee. But, you know, once you got past, and I heard a few days ago that it's something that might happen, if I'm being honest, and so you hear that, you know, he's going, and you're a little shocked at first. But then you remember, I guess, you know, Keelan Peely's coming back. Arian Carter's going to play. You know, they like Jeremiah Thielander a little bit too. They've signed some guys they like. And they're really only going to play two linebackers because everybody's in a nickel these days. So, you know, Herring had a decision to make. Did he want to wait 1 year and then hope to earn the spot back? Or did he want to go somewhere where he thought he could play for a couple of years? And it looks like he wants to go play for a couple of years. And I don't think it hurts that he's a guy who started, you know, whatever, 11 or 12 SEC games. That's probably going to, you know, I would imagine, drive that NIL money up for wherever he goes. So, yeah, I mean, I'm not shocked or anything by it, I should say, but it's just kind of the way business goes now. I don't think it's crippling for Tennessee in any way, but it's not like Tennessee wanted to lose him.
Probably speaks a little bit to, you know, what they lost in Keenan Peely, you know, before last season, and what he might bring this year, right? I mean, because we know Herring's good. He's a good player.
Yeah, we know that. We know he's a good player, but also I think it really does speak to what they thought they'd lost in Peely. I mean, there's a reason that last year he was going to start and play, you know, most of the time. And he's a good player. He should be. He's a grown man. He should be a grown man. I mean, at his age, and you know, it's like he's going to be getting AARP stuff in the mail soon. But you know, he's a good player. You know, he's a mature guy. He's married. He picks up defenses very quickly. And it's not just that he's a smart guy and a reliable guy. It's that he's also physically a very good linebacker. He's a really big guy. He can move. He can stick you. And he's kind of, you know, one of those guys that you really, really like being in the middle there of your defense calling the shot. So, yeah, I think it does speak a lot to Peely.
Wes Rucker with us here on Robbie and Rex Road. So, Wes, the Vols sweep LSU over the weekend on the diamond, obviously in the top five right now in terms of the rankings. What do you make of the season that Tony Vitello and company are putting together so far this year?
I'm pretty impressed. I mean, honestly, I thought 2 years ago that might be the best college offense I'd ever seen. I think this one's better. I do. I mean, LSU's got a lot of arm talent, and those guys were fired up to play to kind of try to salvage their season last weekend. So they did a pretty reasonable job, but they still allowed like 7 runs a game. I mean, because this Tennessee offense is just kind of a freight train. You know, that top three in the lineup is nasty, really, really nasty. 3 complete hitters, kids who are going to make a lot of good money playing this game. And then the other 6 spots ain't so bad either. I mean, they just kind of they're a nightmare to face because they give you good at bats. They can hit to all fields. They got power. They can just kind of, you know, they can, you know, if you shift against them defensively, because you can still overshift in college ball, they can just dump the ball the other way. I mean, they're really good players, and they're a team that plays pretty good defense. And, you know, I think they are better than I thought they would be going into the season. I thought they would be good. They're a little better than good. But still, Vitello keeps kind of hinting that they're not quite yet as good as people think, because they need a few more arms to step up. They need to get A.J. Russell back in the rotation. They need to get him back healthy at least and get him out of the bullpen or something. They need to get something out of that arm because they could use a pitcher of his caliber. But, man, they're right there. It's late in the season or getting to be that point, and they're kind of right where they want to be. They're right where they can attack.
So Rick Barnes gets Darlin Stone Dubar, great name. Hofstra, previously, oh gosh, where was he previously? He was somewhere before Hofstra.
Iowa State.
There you go. Big wing, probably. I look at him and I'm thinking, okay, that's probably potentially taking Josiah's spot. It's sort of the stretch 4, or you know, could move around some of the lineup some. But what do you think about that and just where this roster is right now and, you know, what may be ahead? I know they're looking for, I think, another big, right, with Adu and Awaka out the door.
Yeah, I think, you know, there's a small chance I've heard that Awaka might reconsider now. That Adu's also gone, because I think one of the reasons he was leaving was playing time, right? I mean, that was, he wanted more guaranteed playing time, and I think Tennessee was trying to tell him, well, young man, if you quit fouling every 30 seconds you're on the court, you might play more. So, you know, I mean, that's part of it, but, you know, I think they love Awaka. They didn't want him to go. They didn't want Adu to go, but that's just the cost of college business these days. It's kind of how things are, and people have been, it wasn't a secret, Joe, people have been tapping up that roster late in the year. Like, everybody on that roster had somebody close to them who was telling them, hey, this is what's going to be out there for you if you leave. And so that stuff's out there now. It just is. It's the way of the world. But, yeah, I think Dubar is a guy who I really, really like him. I think there are a few guys who have the size and the versatility to kind of play that James role, even as frustrating as he could be at times. There was a reason why he was always out there, and that was because everything he could do, the versatility was unmatched on the roster. And there's not a lot of guys in the college game who have the size and skill combination to do that role. Well, Tennessee just got another one of them. This kid's 6'8", 215, whatever he is, like a 40% career shooter from 3, you know, averages 8 or so rebounds a game. Scores 17.4 points a game, put up, I think, 24 against Duke. He's a big, big kid, a 6'8", who can go out there and score, can play the 2, 3, 4, whatever you need, spot-up shooter, can go in there and get rebounds. He's a really good player. I think he fits really, really nicely. He fits a hole that this team did not have without Josiah Jordan-James. And so that is a huge piece. Now, Even I think if they can convince Awaka to come back, they need another big man. And I still think they're looking for a shooter. Like, they're trying to get the kid from Belmont, but unfortunately, he's from North Carolina.
Kate Tyson, yeah.
Yeah, unfortunately, he's from North Carolina, and he's going there next. And, yeah, that's going to be hard to keep him away from the heels, I think. But they're going to try. They think they're in that fight, at least. So, but they're out there looking because they've certainly got maybe 3-4 more spots to fill.
Well, Wes, great stuff, man. Really appreciate you taking time to be with us this morning, and we'll talk to you soon. Thanks for taking time to be with us.
No problem. Anytime, guys. You know that.
Absolutely. Wes Rucker from GoVols 24/7, our guest here on Robbie and Rexall. We'll take your thoughts on what Wes had to say. Lots going on with the Vols right now. We'll react to some of that coming up next. You're listening to Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5, 106.3, The Game. Score big this spring with Lee Company and the Nashville Predators in the 10K Power Play Giveaway. Enter for a chance to win a Kohler home generator or $10,000 towards Lee Company Home Services. Go to LeeCompany.com/giveaway in order to enter. That's LeeCompany.com/giveaway in the 10K Power Play Giveaway. Contest entries are accepted until Saturday, April the 20th, which is this Saturday. Lee Company, all you need. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rexroad, Nick Kieser here with you on this Tuesday morning. Appreciate Wes Rucker from GoVols 24/7 for taking time to be with us.
Keith's up here saying, good dude, I'm sure, but he, Wes Rucker, is the Matt Jones of UT.
Wow.
And I responded. I said, I can report that Wes does not wear Vols gear to the Vols games.
Yeah.
Don't call him the Matt Jones of UT.
Pom-poms?
I do not. He does not. As far as I can tell, I have not seen foam fingers.
But the bedazzled T necklace around his neck.
Maybe. And maybe that's like hidden by the shirt. Yeah. Yeah, I guess. It's possible.
Eat that, Carl Lewis!
There's nothing like Tennessee football, just like there's nothing like Kentucky basketball, which I guess is true.
Yeah, but that was a lot of interesting information from Wes. I forgot to give him crap about Zach Edey, but oh well,
yeah.
We can do that.
Call him back.
We got on Twitter a little bit. That's okay. But
surprised he still agreed to do the show.
Yeah.
Good to know.
Yeah, he and Cal Tucker got in a big feud, but I think they're friends again too now.
That's so good.
Everything's fine. But yeah, Elijah Herring, it's so hard to have depth because it does make sense. Clearly, Arian Carter is a player on the rise, and clearly, Keenan Peely is really good.
Yeah.
Because they were devastated when they lost him last year, and it's just like immediately, boom, that guy's starting right now. Like Wes said, you get someone in their mid-20s, and you feel good about that in college football. But, man, I mean, Herring, you know, you're one injury away, and right. Obviously you've lost Aaron Beasley, and, you're one injury away from really all of a sudden having to dig deep and put a lot of inexperience out there. And next year, Herring would probably just take that spot back, right? Peely's got 1 year left.
You would think.
But that's just not how it goes anymore. You can find another team out there that will pay a premium for a player like you, who would be one of the best on their roster. You know, there's other Power 5 defenses that have less talent that would take him right now, and he starts immediately and does well. And it's just people don't want to sit and don't want to stick it out. And I'm not blaming him. I'm just saying this is the state of things. It's hard, very hard to have depth.
Keenan Peely has been playing college football since Josh Dobbs was the starting quarterback at Tennessee.
There you go.
It's a long time, man. He was a redshirt freshman in 2016.
Wow.
And this will be his seventh year of college football.
A decade in college. Sounds like me, except I didn't play any football. Good job.
Hey. I mean, it's good. It's nice to have if you're Tennessee. He's a good player, and obviously he's been around for a while at this point. So they're very excited to have him. I'm reading through his bio right now. Like, when did he start? Oh, 2016. Okay. Long time ago.
It's amazing. Yeah, you know, the COVID years are done now because that's part of this. Right? Obviously, he did the mission trip, which is part of BYU, but also like the COVID year adds another one, and those are done now. You know, another thing with the Wes interview, it's amazing, too, to think about. Like, Kate, I mean, it's so rough for mid-major hoops, man. Like, you know, Casey Alexander's done such a great job at Belmont. Following up Rick Byrd there, he did a great job at Lipscomb before Belmont. And, you know, it just feels like you're just a feeder for these Power 5 programs now. Like, it's turned into, find some good players. We're not sure on that guy. Oh, he can play. Okay, we'll take him. Thanks. I mean, you got North Carolina and Tennessee fighting over Cade Tyson. Cade Tyson, heck of a player at Belmont. But it's like, I don't know, like a decade ago, like the best player at Belmont, would you think that like Tennessee and North Carolina or whatever, two top shelf Power 5 programs would be fighting over that player?
Probably not.
In some cases. Yeah. You know, like Steph Curry. Imagine Steph Curry in the NIL era at Davidson.
Yeah.
I mean, North Carolina and Duke are just like camping outside his dorm room before his senior year, you know? Like, but those players are just, they are just not staying at the mid-major level. It's sad.
Well, it is sad, but it's not. I mean, it's going to be what it is, right?
Yeah.
I mean, with the money being what it is and the deals that you can now get for yourself, I mean, these superstar players at mid-major conferences, I think, are quickly going to become a thing of the past in terms of the staying power that they have there.
Now, the flip side is, so Malik Dia goes from Vanderbilt to Belmont. So he was really good for Belmont last year. You do have the Power 5 player who said, okay, I can go start there. But in a lot of cases, it's like, I'm going to go there for a year.
And then go back somewhere.
And then go back, which is what happened, by the way. He went to Ole Miss. Vanderbilt was hoping, with Mark Byington, was in there to possibly bring him right back. But he went to Ole Miss. So, yeah.
Exactly.
Meanwhile, it's like, are these credits transferring?
I've already taken this class. Why do I got to do this again? And then there's the diamond where Tony Vitello and the Vols, they sweep LSU this weekend. They're 30-6 overall in the top five. They're number four. They're taking on Kentucky next weekend. So, which, by the way, Kentucky's number three at 30-5. So the SEC continuing to be very well represented in the world of college baseball. But the Vols, pretty darn good so far this year under Tony Vitello.
Well, I mean, that's a big statement Wes just made. It's a better offense, and I mean, it's hard to argue with the results. They're just mashing all over the place. And I understand that park helps some, but they do it in other parks too. You know, so they had just had a huge, you know, they swept LSU. LSU's probably the most disappointing team probably in college baseball.
Yep.
Defending national champ, they're not good. Meanwhile, Vanderbilt goes down to Texas A&M, gets swept, and gets really blown out three times.
Which, by the way, they're the number one team in the country right now.
Texas A&M goes up to number one. Vanderbilt down to 13. I know that's at least in D1 baseball.
Yep.
Little concern about Vanderbilt. You know, the huge difference, I don't have it in front of me. I think Vanderbilt has like 50 homers this year. Does Tennessee have 90? Is that right? Tennessee sitting there at 90 homers. You know, Vanderbilt, a lot of pitching, a lot of talent overall. Little concern about that lineup. You know, I mean, the name of the game, like it or not, is hitting for power. And that's what, you know, obviously that's what Vitello has built that roster to do that, and they do it at a high level.
Tennessee's 95, number one in the country.
95,
yeah.
Okay. And I think Vanderbilt's around 50, and it's just, you know, they're still a really good team. That series is coming up in a few weeks. Very excited about that. That'll be back here in Nashville. But little concerned about Vanderbilt right now having enough hitting to hold up.
By the way.
Really make a run
Tennessee,
this year.
Tennessee, number one in baseball right now in home runs. At 95, Georgia number two at 94. Austin Peay, number three, 86. The Govs.
Fly is open. Let's go, Peay.
That's right. 86.
Good job,
homers.
Govs. Man.
Just mashing the ball up there in Clarksville.
Holy cow.
I like it.
The Govs, baby.
Number three in the country.
Georgia kind of surprises me, actually.
Yeah.
Now that you mentioned that, too. Well, good for you, Austin Peay.
Trying to find Vanderbilt.
Yeah, I mean, I think they're about 50, which is way down the list.
I'm trying to find.
Still going.
They're still going. It only goes to 50. They're not. Let's go to page two.
They're not. So they're not even at 50. Is that right? Okay.
Well, I mean, they could be tied. Let's see.
Oh, they could be in a tie at 50.
I'm still looking for Vanderbilt. going down a long way.
Have they been relegated?
Has Vanderbilt been relegated? On the list? I'll eventually find Vanderbilt. All right. I'll let you know where they are.
We will tell you their home run number. After the break.
615-737-1025 is our phone number. We'll get to that. We'll also get into the Predators, who took an unconventional route last night to wrap up wild card number one. We'll get into all that. Robbie and Rex Road, 1025-1063, the game. Welcome back in. Robbie and Rex Road, 1025-1063, the game. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Nick Keyser here with you on this Tuesday morning. Join Nashville Super Speedway in the city of Lebanon for a Speedway on the Square this Saturday from 1 to 6 p.m. in downtown Lebanon. Stop by, bring the family for a day filled with inflatables, face painting, balloon art, live music, and a ticket giveaway to the Ally 400 NASCAR Cup Series race at 3:30. Make sure you're there for that. Should be a fun time in downtown Lebanon this weekend. Taking your thoughts on the Nashville Predators. Joe, before we get there, Vanderbilt with 37 home runs.
I apologize. I said I had him at 50. I way overshot that. 37. And it's
tied
what?
For 137th in the country.
Yeah. That's, again, they've got pitching for days. And, you know, they've got some good hitters. But that's tough in today's game to be that deficient hitting the long ball.
Yeah.
So we'll see. They got to bounce back.
We're going to get a lot of Vanderbilt fans on the text line now being like, well, if we played in that stupid park that Tennessee plays in, you'd hit a few more home runs.
Yeah.
That's probably true.
There is some truth to that. I don't know that they'd make up the difference between 95 and 37. Holy cow.
Probably not. Take your thoughts on the Preds as well. Preds lose last night 4-2 to the Pittsburgh Penguins in their regular season finale. So at the time the game ended last night, the destiny was out of their own hands in terms of the Western Conference first wild card spot being under their control. And then Johnny Hines and the Minnesota Wild go on the road last night and take down the L.A. Kings in regulation 3-1, which means that L.A. is at 97 points. They have one game left. The max they can get to is 99. The Predators finished with 99, and the Predators hold the tiebreaker against L.A. So the Predators are locked into wild card one. Either Vegas is going to lose one of their next two games, and they'll be back in the wild card two spot, or the Predators or Vegas wins both of them. L.A. falls back to wild card two, and it'll be Predators and probably the Vancouver Canucks in round one. But last night, with L.A. going down, L.A. can no longer pass the Predators in the standings.
So you're telling me that the Preds are definitely wild card one?
That's what I'm telling you.
Well, according to our update, that's not true.
Oh, boy. Oh, boy.
Now, who do I believe? Do I believe Robbie Stanley or Nick Kieser? He's not listening. Look at him. He's doing something else. He's over. Look at him. He doesn't even know that we're talking about him right now. What's he listening to?
I think he's been tasked to find something.
He's
so
really
he's working
busy.
Hard at it.
Is he tasked to change his update so it's accurate?
Maybe so.
Can we task him to do that?
I think we might have to do that too.
still not paying attention.
He's either master at ignoring you or he's doing something else. It's good stuff.
No, I mean, yeah, he's talking to somebody. Wow. All right. Hopefully he's creating a new update. So yes, the Preds are locked into wild card one.
Well, it is weird, though.
Because, John Hines comes through.
Well, yesterday, the NHL sent out like this memo talking about all these clinching scenarios. And it was like, well, if the Predators get 1 point against Pittsburgh, they're locked into wild card one. It's like, okay, well, yeah, that is that. And then, but I guess since LA technically right now is ahead of Vegas, it's not a clinch for the Predators technically. So,
yeah, it has to the things that have to happen for it to but if you do the math,
but it's like, going to happen.
That's like what it is.
That's what it is. Like the Predators cannot be lower than wild card one, and they can't be higher than wild card one.
How about
one,
that, John
so
Hines?
Wild card one.
You know, speaking of the spreads and John Hines, I screwed it up. I was going to ask a trivia question, but I blew it. But I was very interested on the broadcast last night at Bally Sports to see, you know, the Preds tied the 06-07 great Preds team that was loaded for the most goals in a season with 266. And in the last couple games, they moved past the second place team, which was, of course, John Hines' team of Mr. No Offense, Can't Coach a Lick, John Hines of 2 years ago. That team had 262 goals.
Yes.
So only this team in 07 have scored more goals in a season than that John Hines team of 2 years ago.
It's
interesting, isn't it?
It's interesting, and we were talking about this when it came to the top line, and you know, I made the statement that the Forsberg O'Reilly Nyquist line is the best line they've ever had, and I had a couple friends text me after and be like, "Really? You think that's the best line they've ever had?" I'm like, "Yeah, look at the numbers. It is. Like, it's not arguable. It is the best line that they've ever had." So I think when you put in the whole team success that way too, like this is a much better offensive team than I think people around the league who aren't paying like day-to-day close attention to the Predators. I think it's a much better offensive team than most people realize.
Yeah. Well, yeah, you've written about it, talked about it a few times. Gus Nyquist has been a nice player in this league for a long time. People know Gus Nyquist, but so they know they have their perception of Gus Nyquist. Gus Nyquist on this team this year is elite.
75 point player.
I mean, so and look, man, he consistently does it. He consistently gets it done. He's fantastic. And again, I think it's certainly playing with those two guys, but it just works. So, yeah, and even, I mean, I think there's some truth to that with O'Reilly even, you know, at this point in his career. So it is, you go up and down the lineup, and again, you got Novangelista is an exciting young tandem, but there's not a lot that you know, people around the league even know from this team.
Yeah, for sure. And, you know, the other interesting part, like the Preds power play. So they had a couple of chances last night. Didn't get it. Actually, I think they had one. They had one chance last night on the power play.
That was ugly.
Didn't get it to go. It's like the league as a whole. So the Predators finished at 21.6% on the power play, which is pretty good.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, I think it's good. It's 16th in the league. So it's dead in the middle. 21.6%. And I was interested, like, going back to 06-07, that team. What, I mean, their power play was okay. They were 17.4%. But just the way the league has come, the number one power play in 06-07 was 22.8%.
And this year
in the Montreal Canadiens. And then you go to this year, and I think it's like it's almost 29.
Yeah,
like,
so it's pushing 30.
Let's go see where it is. It is.
Which is insane.
Tampa at 28.7. So, I mean, you've got 28.7. There's like four teams that are within 27, 26, 24 for Dallas and Colorado. Like the power plays in this league right now are lethal. And it's really hard to stop for these penalty killers. Like,
yeah.
We're in a cycle right now in the NHL where the power plays are deciding a lot of these games.
And 2 years ago, that team, I mean, what was their percentage that year? Because I think that had a lot to do with their offense, you know, the career year for Forsberg, career year for Duchesne, overall 262 goals. I mean, the power play that year had a huge reemergence and was a big part of
that. It was 24.4%.
So there you go. Which is that the, I mean, what's
the best in team history?
The best in team history.
Yeah.
Okay. And this one is second best?
I think it's second best.
So there you go.
But it, then that goes
and it hasn't you, felt like that a lot of the year.
Exactly.
Now let's remember. What's that?
Third best power play.
Oh, are you correcting a fact?
Yes, it is.
Oh, okay. Do is we it? Trust you?
I
what's,
hope so.
What's second?
What's second? The 11-12 season.
Okay, there you go. Third best.
Okay. All right.
There you go.
Good job.
What do you go, Nick?
I would have, look, poor phrasing, Joe. I'm going
to
go back to
glad
earlier.
You're listening to
poor program. Phrasing, my
oh,
friend.
He's now he's back in defending himself.
You poor phrasing on what?
You don't have on to what I said. I should have said their opponent is not decided. Officially.
What was the exact phrasing?
You've got him flustered.
What
now.
Was the exact phrasing you used?
Precisely, I had said it was not a locked-in spot, but it is a locked-in spot pretty much, but they don't know who they're playing.
Pretty much?
There's no pretty much. It's locked in.
It's locked in. This is getting
you asked what I said.
This is getting the Kyrie Irving shape of the globe.
I'm not a flat earther, by God. Oh, my gosh. No.
Keith is going to kill us both. Oh, man.
At least he got us that hot honey pepperoni pizza before.
I loved that pizza. That was
blood.
So good.
Yes, he did.
It was good, wasn't it?
Oh, man.
So, anyway, Preds.
By the way, we got a lot of people in the text line today, like, screaming at us, like, what are you guys talking about? Vegas can still win both their games. Yes, guys, I get it. L.A. is also involved in this.
And, well, listen, I will say this. Someone was on the text line yesterday, I think, saying the L.A. thing, and I was like, well, whatever. That doesn't, you know. I mean, I didn't realize going into last night that it could be taken care of with a loss.
Yeah,
I
just didn't think they'd lose.
Well, yeah.
I just didn't think they'd lose to Minnesota.
Yeah.
But they did.
They did. John Hines hockey. It still works.
It does.
Ryan Hartman. Big
it
goal.
It does. So here they are. And Vancouver is 1 point away from clinching the division. So all they need is one. They play tonight against Calgary. If they get a point tonight, they are the Pacific Division champions. If they get two, then they still have a chance to catch Dallas. Although Dallas closes out the season against St. Louis, I would expect them to win that game. And I think even if they get a point in that game, then they've clinched
then
number
the
one overall spot. So
if you're Vancouver, and I know all these teams are whoever we play, I don't care. Yeah, we're just worried about us. But if you're Vancouver, in your private moments in the coach's office, do you say, you know, it'd be better to maybe deal with the Kings than the Preds? Like, how important is it to get the one and get the Kings?
That's a good question. I think.
And I'm assuming Vegas winning two games, but I am going to safely assume that.
I feel pretty confident about Vegas winning these two games, but we'll see. I think I view it as important. I don't know if they do. Like, I do think there's something to be said for the way that LA plays in terms of, like, the trap that they set. It's a pain in the butt to try to deal with. Like, defensively, they are so locked into that that it's a pain in the butt to try to play against. So it's just a different way that they play. You know, it's one of those things that you have to be really patient to kind of break through it. So I guess if you're Rick Tocchet, if you're those Vancouver players, like, how do you view that part of it? Like, it's two very different styles. So I guess it just depends on which style you prefer.
I mean, they see
to play
it.
Against.
They see it.
They see it a lot.
In the same division. Yeah. But, yeah.
So, I don't know. I can tell you this, and I said this earlier, and Johnny, our friend who listens to us in Vancouver, also confirming. Fan base up there wants the Predators. I can tell you that. The Vancouver fans are licking their chops for the Predators.
Let's get some Preds Twitter and Canucks Twitter going at it, baby.
Could be a little spicy. Could be a little spicy. This week's Nashville's Best Deal, speaking of spicy, Prince's Hot Chicken, the original and iconic hot chicken joint. Get half off a $25 gift card while supplies last at thegamenashville.com/deals. Gift card only good for the Tanger Outlets in Antioch and inside Assembly Food Hall in downtown Nashville, so make sure you check that out. We'll give more thoughts on the Preds coming up next, more of your thoughts to get to on the Preds' potential playoff opponent on the text line as well, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. You're listening to Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5, 106.3, The Game. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5, 106.3, The Game. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Nick Keyser here with you, broadcasting live from our Busy Bee Plumbing, Heating, and Air Conditioning Game Nashville studios, home of the $99 yearly Beehive membership, where the buzz is always about great service. Preds lose last night, but they lock in their wild card number one spot anyway, with LA losing to Minnesota in regulation. So here's what has to happen, Joe, for the playoff matchup to be known for sure tonight. So Vancouver plays Calgary tonight. If Vancouver beats Calgary, then they are still technically alive in terms of the race to catch Dallas. Dallas plays tomorrow in their regular season finale against St. Louis. If Vancouver loses in regulation, then Edmonton can still technically catch Vancouver for the top spot in the division. So the only way tonight that you know for sure that it will be Predators and Canucks in round one is if Calgary beats Vancouver in overtime / shootout. And they get 1 point. They can't be caught by Edmonton. They can no longer catch Dallas. And you know that it's Vancouver-Nashville in round one.
You got to love this stuff. You got to love this time of year.
It's a lot of stuff right there.
Yeah. But don't worry. It'll all be – it's pretty clear that it's going to be Vancouver.
It is.
So I guess that'd make it easier. We'd know a day or two earlier, but I think it's probably going to end up getting there.
So how do you handle this week if you're Andrew Brunette now? The Predators are done. There are teams playing, including Vancouver, all the way up until Thursday. So the Predators are going to be off today. I would assume they're back on the ice tomorrow for practice in some form or fashion. And then we'll see when they play. I guess it could be Saturday, Sunday, Monday, Tuesday next week.
They were talking Tuesday yesterday.
They could be off for a while. So, like, how are you handling this time off if you're Andrew Brunette and the Predators as you try to, number one, yes, get rested up and kind of get the body healed up to the point where you're fresh, ready to go in the playoffs, but also trying to make sure that your game stays in order as best you can when you're not playing games and you have to practice time.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting. You certainly, the good thing is whoever needs rest, you know, Yossi last night, that was a little bit of a scare. Maybe he's a little sore. I mean, certainly there are guys who are banged up, so you're going to rest some people, but that's so long to go without an actual game. It's hard to imagine you wouldn't have some rust. Just a little bit of, you know, timing lost. I mean, it's such a timing and being connected sport, you know, execution, precision, and then just, you know, the intensity of playoff hockey too. Like you were saying earlier, there is obviously a difference between being able to practice and being together and working on things and like having the off week. where you.
It's called a bye week.
Well, it's not. It shouldn't be called a bye week. The idle week where everybody's out fishing and doing whatever the heck they're doing. That's just total rust.
Having some beers.
Come back. Yeah. So that's better than that, but still, the intensity of these games and the fact that you've just been in this situation of every other day or every once in a while you get 2 days in between is a game. And the Preds have been playing. I mean, look, they've been playing to get in the playoffs. So for the most part, they've been going full intensity. Here at the very end, they saw teams that were more desperate than them, like last night, and the first period showed it. But for the most part, they've had to play at that top level, and 25-3 to finish the last 28 games tells you that they played at a high level. So how much do you lose, and then what does Brunette do to try to keep it together? You're going to have some game-like situations as much as you can.
So now that we know it's going to be, for the most likely, Vancouver. And if it's not Vancouver, I mean, I guess maybe Edmonton could catch them. But probably Vancouver is what you're looking at. Probably around 90%. Maybe over 90%. How concerned are you about the travel part of it? Because I know we're going to hear about that from some Preds fans heading into this. We're going to think back to 2016 and going out there, trekking all the way out there to Anaheim for 7 games and then doing the same thing with San Jose. And it was clear by game 7 of the San Jose series that the travel had caught up to him. And it was the worst game I've ever seen Shea Weber play in my life. And it was the last game that he played in a Predators uniform.
Yeah.
So it was the whole team was rough that night. So it clearly caught up to him.
Pecorine destroys a stick.
Just destroys.
It tells you how that went.
Yeah, it does. So how concerned are you about the travel aspect of it, knowing that Vancouver is, I believe, as far away as you can get here in the NHL for a matchup for the Predators?
Yeah, well, if you get to second round, game 7 against, like, Vegas or Edmonton, and then you're totally tapped out, then there you go. Then it was all for naught. But you're trying to win a series. I mean, ultimately, I don't think it's a big deal. Those, again, like
you sweep
you said,
them, you only have to go out there once.
Well, right, that's the thing. I mean, those were both 7-game series, Anaheim and San Jose, that year. So, you know, and that's obviously they have obviously one more home game. You have one less home game. You know, I don't think it's that big of a deal at all. I mean, I think ultimately it's about the hockey. I mean, it's 3 more hours on the plane, which is annoying, but it's 3 hours sitting on a plane.
A private plane.
Yeah.
Also.
Right. I think you'd be okay.
Playing some cards.
Yeah. Yeah. Right. You know, watch a movie, you know. Some of the movies that Nick hasn't watched.
Yes.
By the way, it was Friedman who said the Tuesday thing. So it was okay. Friedman on the 32 Thoughts is the one who said, and it's just, I don't know why Monday wouldn't work, but he said on the podcast, I don't think Vancouver's starting until next Tuesday. So
that's a long time to be off.
That's a long time, man. That's a long time. And then so then if that were the case, well, that's really interesting. So I guess it would be Tuesday, Thursday, and then the game 3 at Nashville, or the first Nashville game might not be until Sunday. Right? Yeah. Interesting.
Also for travel, it's I've perfect. Estimated that if they play a
Are
seven
these more
game,
facts from you?
Yes.
Did you use a calculator?
Yes.
Okay.
I did. I estimate if they play a 7-game series against Vancouver, there and back, it would be 12,000 miles of travel. So there you go.
So again, that's like, I mean, like 3 hands of euchre is like 100 of those miles, you know?
Yes.
Yeah.
Just a bit outside.
You ever play euchre?
I have not played euchre. You got like a Michigan
We're going to have you guys drinking pop and playing euchre, baby. Euchre is a scaled down spades. You played spades?
Yeah.
Okay. So basically, euchre is all the suits can be trump, whereas in spades is always trump and you use the whole deck.
Okay.
I'm going to teach you guys to play euchre.
Please do.
Next time,
a lot of northern activities going on in this program.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, I don't know very many card games. I don't really like them that much. So teach me.
Okay.
So I just buy
a cry for help from Nick Keyser.
Please.
Teach me cards and facts.
Please, Joe. Please.
Did you change the update?
What do you mean? There's a new one playing at the very top of
the
hour.
Yeah, he records a new one every hour.
Oh, yeah. Okay. That's right. So you did. Good. Great finish of the show today, guys. Well,
as we
done.
Say often, put it in the Hall of Fame. Another edition today.
We should just do a greatest hits show with all of our last segments together.
We should.
And first. The first and last segments. Like, at first I always have some dumb story that no one cares about.
That does it for us today on the program. Jason Big Joe's coming up next. You're listening to 102.5, 106.3, The Game.